Okay, you guys ready? Hopefully won't need too much coffee for this one. So I think what I find very exciting about this is that imagine that you're trying to develop a network protocol. You really have three options, right? One is you could do a standards-based protocol. Now, there are changes to HTTP that are coming, and obviously NFS has had changes, but how many years does it take? I'll give you an analogy. When I was first excited about networking, my professor was working on IPNG. This was the 80s, the late 80s. IPNG was going to fix the problem we had with these stupid, tiny addresses like 127.0.0.1, right? Now, how many people are running IPv6 on your laptop for your day-to-day activities? Not very many. 30 years. Still hasn't caught on. Standardization doesn't always work out well as the fast way to get features into a protocol that you need. So, one of the really cool things is watching in open source, things come in without documentation. The source code is the documentation, and as Chris said, that isn't always optimal. But what if you have something that's well documented, which I think SMB is well documented, thank you to many of the people here, but it also moves fairly quickly. And whether we're talking about new features like compression, or whether we're talking about new authentication mechanisms, or whether we're talking about new mechanisms for inserting ranges and doing fallocate, this protocol is evolving and continues to evolve, and the scope of this is really hard to get your head around unless you do things like what Volcker does. Samba is, what, 3 to 4 million lines of code now? It's enormous. It's not the only server implementation out there, obviously. We have Azure, we have Windows, we have NetApp, we have Max. We have so many server implementations here alone. Think how rich this protocol is. But also how, if we address this problem, and by the way, I thought this was interesting to see. As you guys probably noticed a few months ago, Lustre was removed from the kernel. Well, what if we solve the POSIX problem and gradually are able to migrate customers, Linux to Linux even, Linux to Azure, Linux to Max, Linux to Samba, Linux to Windows? What if we could migrate some of these guys to using SMB with this enormous set of features? Okay, first question, what is POSIX? Now here's where I differ with Chris. POSIX is almost a myth. Nobody uses POSIX. Whether you're talking about BSD or whether you're talking about Linux, POSIX is such a tiny little thing. But what they mean by POSIX is sometimes, hey, the thing I use in Linux. Now, I've shown this slide for a long time, but, you know, I wanted to give some specific examples about, you know, how small POSIX is and how big what we actually have to solve is. So this is a few months out of date. It's probably more than 293 now. But think about this. Syscall is coming into the file system. Syscall is coming into the memory manager. 293 versus 100 for POSIX. No, not all of those are file system, but it gives you an idea of roughly how small POSIX is related to the problem we have to solve. And what's the problem we have to solve? Making Linux work really well. So I want to give two concrete examples of this. So, you guys have ever renamed a file? You know, rename sounds simple, right? It's just rename, right? It's a rename syscall. POSIX is a rename syscall. Sure, a source and a target. Okay, I can understand what rename does. Takes the source name. Changes the target name, right? Wrong, right? So now we have a rename at 2 syscall, and we've had it for longer than I was sort of embarrassed looking at this, realizing how long that call's been in. So there are 3 flags for rename. If I'm counting correctly, that's 8 permutations, right, for rename. Most people think, oh, rename, I get it. Okay, so we have this difference between Windows and Linux because, you know, rename in Windows, if the file is open, it's going to fail. You know, we have this kind of, our brains wrapped around the idea is, okay, I understand the rename problem. But do you? When you have, what does whiteout mean? Okay, and what does rename exchange mean if one of the files is open? Okay? I mean, so these are things we have to think through, right? So, but this is just an example of things that are relatively recent. These are just two syscalls I just picked randomly, fallocate and rename. Now, the good news is, for SMB, we have most of the fallocate features already there. And so some of this actually doesn't even require POSIX extensions. But we have to think through these problems. But first, we have to solve the elephant in the living room. The big things Chris mentioned, case sensitivity, and some of the most common situations. But what's the motivation here? The motivation here is we got to make Linux work. So you talk about Azure, right? In Azure, what, the majority of clients are now Linux, right? The VMs. It's a huge number, right?
We don't actually know, actually, which is interesting, because we have to try and determine by how many credits the request
So, I mean, it's so cool because, like, think about this, that even in Azure, huge amount of Linux and obviously in Amazon and, you know, these devices, for all we know, Linux is buried in this thing. Who knows? You would never know how much, where Linux is even installed. But we have to make these apps work well. We have this toolkit that's amazing, and it solves about 80% of our problems. The POSIX extensions that now are in the Linux kernel solve another, you know, 15% of those, or 18%. And we'll have to work on those last few percent with feedback from you guys. Now, these changes are in the Linux kernel. You could try them in Linux 4.18, right? You could try them today. And this presentation, just for clarity, is run on Linux 5.0. This is a three-day-old kernel. So 5.0 RC4. So I do my slides on the stuff we actually are coding. Okay, so what would you do if you're running Linux 4.18 or Linux 5.0? You would mount with 3.1.1. Now, actually, that's incorrect because very recently, if you guys are fans of the Linux client, 3.1.1 is one of the default dialects now. So it's you don't even need to specify it if it's 5.0. But if it's earlier than 5.0, you have to specify verse equals 3.1.1. You have to specify a mount option of POSIX. I could have said Linux. But I also felt like there are cases where this might be useful for other platforms. And the extensions are small enough, intentionally, so they would likely apply to other Unix as well. So in effect, you really have one thing to do, mount with POSIX. But there's one minor problem. By default, we map illegal characters, reserved characters, things like colon. Things like greater than, less than. We map those automatically into a reserved range in Windows. Well, actually, it's the SFM, the Mac reserve range, but Windows and Macs support this. So Windows and Macs have this set of bytes, set of Unicode characters, excuse me, that are reserved for remapping colon into Fox 0 something or other. And so there's seven or eight characters there that are remapped. Well, with POSIX, we don't need to do the remapping. So we have to turn that off. So in this version of it, at least, in the experimental version of a POSIX mount option, we probably should turn off POSIX automatic, or turn off the remapping of characters automatically. But you have two things you specify, POSIX and no map POSIX, which means don't remap colon and backslash and that sort of thing. Now, Jeremy Allison has a tree on Samba.org. You can go clone his tree and look at his master SMB2 branch, and it works great. I'm running it here right now. There was also one of the vendors here had an experimental version of it to play with. Now, what's an example of what you would do? Note that you don't have to specify verse equals 3.1.1 if it's 5.0. We're remapping client-side symlinks. You don't have to do that, but that is often useful. And I turn off permission checking on the client because it's being enforced on the server. It depends on whether you prefer the multi-user mounts or not, whether you want to have the permissions enforced on the client as well. One of the problems with network protocols is you get security enforced on both the client and the server if you want to turn it off on the client. But the essential ones are no map POSIX and this to enable the POSIX mount options. In the Samba server, if you're using a Samba server, you don't need to mangle the names. And I just put the directory mask at 777 so you get the mode bits you expect. So what works? So here is an example from yesterday. Okay, so Aurelian and I and some others were playing around a little bit, but here, creating files with colon, you can see that the local version of the file here in Scratch and the remote version, they look the same, and as I said, this is running RC4 from a couple days ago. No problems with that. Now, there is this new mount option, POSIX, you can see used here. These are tests on 418, I think. Now, what does this buy for you? Already in kernel, if you create a file or make a directory, the mode bits are passed correctly on create. So you're seeing the exact mode bits. The alternative, if you don't use that, is that you have to do things like the NFS ACE, where mode bits are overloaded into the ACL, and a best effort is made to get the rest of the ACL to match everyone read, owner read-write, group owner. Getting that right because of inheritance is really hard to do. So the idea of the NFS ACE was that what Windows does here is allowing you to store mode bits kind of overloaded in a fake ACL entry. This avoids all of those kind of problems, and they're stored, as you might expect, on the server side, matching the mode bits that you passed on the client side. And here's an example of doing that for Makedir. So one of the problems that Chris mentioned, I think the open rename problem, what if you're trying to delete a file or you're trying to rename a file that already is open? You're going to get a failure. So here we have an example where we're going to do this rename test, and as you can see, rename worked, even though it was open. So following POSIX semantics rather than Windows semantics for that. Now another example is statfs. There are a few fields like inodes, inodes free, you don't get unless you're on a POSIX mount. So notice these fields here, inodes free. They're without POSIX extensions, you can't get those, or without a POSIX info level. Now, with the POSIX extensions, notice that instead of getting zero here, we got the correct values. Here's the local version, here's the remote version. Going back to the previous slide, without the POSIX extension, a couple of the fields coming back from stat, there's no way to populate those with SMB without this. So those Unix extensions work, and this is current code. So it's actually been there since 418 for that. So how hard is this? Well, actually pretty easy. On negotiate protocol, we send the negotiate context 100, which is a clue to the server in the negotiate that we want to know if you support POSIX. The server returns back, extremely simple here, right? Server returns back the negotiate context, which indicates that potentially it supports it. So what does that mean in practice? It means that when we open a file or open a directory or do a query info, all these open calls, we can send a POSIX context. It's pretty simple, right? So we have this, you can see it here. Here's a durable handle context, but there we go. So we send a create context on open. And what does it mean? On the response, the server sends things like POSIX specific info back in this optional context. If it didn't support POSIX, you would not get that create context back. So let's talk about what works with or without extensions. So one of the things that Aurelian was experimenting with yesterday that was kind of cool was this NFS ACE thing we've been talking about. So we have a mount parm IDs from SID, and we have a mount parm sifsacl. Sifsacl attempts to populate mode bits like this, mode bits. And remember that there's not just 9 of them. It's not just 777. There's also setuid, setgid, and sticky. So here are some examples of files that were created. And notice that the mode bits match. The mode bits match what you expect. So this is without the Unix extensions. Without the POSIX extensions. Now, what does this mean? What it means is that we're doing a best effort when it says, let's pick an example, 777, we're giving full permission to the owner, to the group, and to everyone. Makes sense. What does this mean? No permission for everyone, right? So, but it also means that the actual exact mode bits are also stored in there, because with inheritance, you might not get exactly this. And because of deny mode bits, it's a pretty complicated story whether you would get the exact permissions. But we also store the exact mode bits in a special ACE, just like Windows does. Okay, so what was wrong with what we had before? Well, WannaCry. You know, these four-letter words Chris talks about. You know, you look at the scope of some of this was staggering, right? What happened in Ukraine, what happened to the largest shipping companies, some of these. So people were nervous about SIFs. And SMB3 is really good. Now, there is an alternative, though. Apple has these AAPL contexts. Samba supports AAPL. The problem is it doesn't solve all the POSIX compatibility issues. And so we needed a couple things. But what do we want? We want SMB3 to be optimal, sure. We want it to be able to do simple tests, compiling a kernel on an SMB3 mount. That's kind of a test that a lot of developers like to use. And we also need to be able to extend them as Linux changes. Right now, there are changes in progress for clone range. There's changes in progress for the mount API. There's some changes in progress for file system stat. We have to be able to move fairly quickly with these changes. And we have to do it in a way that's very, very Linux friendly, that lets us both demonstrate SMB features that are wonderful, that are already there, multi-channel, all these other things, while at the same time getting semantics that work so apps don't break and don't have to rewrite. It's fascinating. People don't realize that NFS doesn't have POSIX semantics, right? They forget this, right? As NFS has lots of cases where there's no open call in NFS v3, right? So like, you can't do a POSIX open perfectly without an open, right? This is hard. NFS 4.2 gets closer, but still, this isn't POSIX, right? If you run XFS test, NFS skips a lot of tests, fails some. It can't do certain things that are POSIX. So one of the things we have to do is, I don't want to do what NFS does, where basically people look in the man page and there's an NFS exception written at the bottom of the man page. This is how it would work if it's on NFS. I would rather that we get as close as possible to local file system behavior. Now, create, rename, delete. Chris may have alluded to this. We have a problem with those, right? Create, rename, delete. If the file is open, renaming or deleting it can cause access denied. What other problems do we have? The metadata that can come back from POSIX is slightly different, the flags, than can come back from Windows over SMB3. What about locking? Locks are advisory in POSIX, and they merge, unless it's OFD locks. So allowing advisory locks, even if we don't allow the merging feature, is an important thing for apps to actually work. What about FS info? We talked about that example of those fields, the inode count. Okay, now let's talk about the server perspective. Jeremy Allison has beaten this into our head. We need to learn from those mistakes in SMB1. They introduced with POSIX extensions in SMB1 security issues. So how do we not do that? Be very careful about symlinks, for example. And the smaller the changes, the better. So notice that our current extensions basically have a negotiate context, which is really trivial to implement, a create context that's pretty small, and the response to the create context that's not that big either. And we're overloading and reusing some existing POSIX-friendly concepts like the NFS well-known ACE for mode the NFS ACL entry that Windows supports to carry some of the features to minimize the size of the extensions. So it's also important, at least on the Samba side, to allow simultaneous Windows and Unix handles, because you may have apps that are coming in from a Mac, you may have apps coming in from Windows, you may have apps coming in from Linux. And allowing simultaneous access to those becomes very important, that it works predictably. And, you know, obviously you can expose POSIX behaviors or not, depending on, you know, path names. You may cross into a mount point where you can't realistically do POSIX behaviors. Now, the changes are pretty small. We have one new info level that's required for the POSIX stat stuff. The POSIX mode bits are encoded into the Windows ACL, so you don't have to invent some way to do that. Jeremy doesn't want to support POSIX ACLs. I'm okay either way. POSIX UIDs and GIDs can be returned as SIDs, and we already have a mechanism to do this, this ID from SID, so that we're able to avoid this. The case sensitivity is the largest change in the server, but is relatively safe. And you know, UCS2 encoding makes it somewhat convenient to keep. There's the mapping to UTF-8. We had some discussion about whether it would be better to make it natively UTF-8. And then on a per-handle basis, this behavior can be encoded. Or sorry, can be requested. So one handle could be POSIX, one could be Windows-style behavior. Okay. So if a server returns a POSIX create context on an open, that means it supports path case-sensitive names on that path. It supports the unlink and rename semantics POSIX on that path. It supports advisory POSIX locking on this file. And actually, to be fair, this isn't POSIX byte range locks. These are OFD locks, because realistically, in Linux, OFD locks are more useful. They stack instead of being merged together. Their behavior is a little bit more usable, and they're important for some of the important use cases. And they're close enough to advisory locks, but the OFD style is technically what these are. Path names are not remapped, so the path names are not translated on the fly. They'll look the same on the server and the client. So hard links already use the Windows set info. It's been there a long time. Symlinks can use the NFS reparse point, and they can also use, if you want to avoid any possible security exposures with wide links, they can be mapped as we do with MF symlinks today, in the same way the Mac does, as client-only symlinks if you prefer. So either of those, so you can expose server-side symlinks, and you can also expose them as client-only symlinks. There's the special SID we talked about, S15883, and then we have other Linux extensions like fallocate. We attempt to map directly onto existing SMB3 operations where possible, and we have a kind of a work item to investigate any missing ones. The create context we talked about, and this is what is actually in the response: number of links, reparse tag, mode, owner SID, group owner SID. Notice that instead of returning the UID, we're returning the SID. The client is responsible for mapping this. But in some cases, for example, if you don't have any way to resolve the SIDs, it's possible that the server has returned something where the UID is encoded at the end of the SID already. There's a couple well-known SIDs Windows and Samba can return where the UID is just at the end of the SID, the Unix UID. So in many cases, the owner UID doesn't even require any translation. The mode bits, reparse tag, and link. Reparse tag is helpful because it helps us identify whether it is a FIFO or a block device or a server-side symlink. So the POSIX owner and mode info is stored, as you see in MSSMB2, with the NFS reparse points, sorry, the NFS access control entries, right? So you have the owner UID embedded in this one, owner group, the modes embedded in S15883. Okay, new info level for query set info and query dir, level 64, find POSIX information. There's a dissector available. Aurelian can talk about that. I think he had a demo possible for that. Where do we go from here? We have to continue doing debugging. And one of the things we're trying to do is, with these extensions, figure out what XFS tests work. And if they're sufficient for particular XFS tests. So as an example, we're testing some of the things we're testing this week are XFS tests that require being able to make a carrier block device. There are other XFS tests that require being able to get and set the owner and to be able to get the mode bits perfect. Obviously, as I mentioned before, in many cases when you're setting mode bits using SysACLE, inheritance causes the resulting ACL to be slightly different than what you thought you were setting. So getting the exact mode bits turns on three or four cases. Getting the exact owner turns on three or four more XFS test cases. And then about six or seven are enabled from the make node, make FIFO example. And then there are dozens and dozens of cases that become available that start working XFS tests with the ability to handle the rename and the byte range locks, advisory locks. And those tests, just homework for us to run all those and make sure and validate that these extensions are solving the problems we think they're solving. It's a lot of work because there are 524 XFS tests now, and we've got about 300 to dig into to make sure they're solving all of these problems. And obviously one of the other challenges, some of the XFS tests, even with Unix extensions, are designed for a local file system with a block device. So we have to be very careful and go very slowly through these. But it's a very exciting time because Jeremy's code works. Volker and others obviously need to do some additional review of it. The client code's already in the first phase of this. It's something that's good enough to experiment with. And we're long past the point of no return. Code's checked in, guys. And this is now us to do additional homework, take the experimental flag off of it, get it more solid. That's going to be a process that will happen over the next 6 months to a year, but I think that it's a lot of really good progress. And just this week, as I showed you, some of the work Aurelian was doing is helping a lot because we've been able to prove that mode bit example, that mechanism works well. Okay, well now it's time for our next talk. And I think you're going to find this fun.